Thank you, or good evening, Whangarei and Raglan. Sorry about the delay. Still having technical problems with this system. Anyway, it's now 10 past six, and you're listening to Raglan talking to Raglan on Raglan Community Radio, Rangiora Whangarei. And let's have a look at what's happening and what has been happening and what the weather's doing. So, weather looks as though we're going to have showers for the next couple of days or so. Seems fairly hard to predict quite when they're coming up. We're supposed to be having some at the moment, but I haven't noticed any. Supposed to be poor visibility in the showers, and maybe it's going to be when we finally get one. Pressure fairly low, which fits in with those showers, 1,005 hectopascals. Temperature still quite high, though, 24 degrees. Supposed to rain go down to about 16 overnight, a couple of nights' time down to 14. Maximum over the next few days, going to be a bit cooler than today, so about 23. The wind's supposed to be picking up, so can't see much movement in the trees at the moment, but we're supposed to get a northeasterly of 25 knots, southwest swell of 1 meter. It's also supposed to pick up tomorrow to 2 meters, and northwest swell of 1 meter. 5 past 8 is the low tide, 0.3 meter low tide. Next one we'll see are the high tides are 10 to 3 tomorrow afternoon. And we're almost down to the equinox in terms of possible sunshine, 25 past 7 to 29 minutes past 7. So 4 minutes difference, or 4 minutes more than the 12 hours. The things which are coming up this week, again, a sort of big question mark over them as to which ones are happening and which ones aren't. I'm fairly sure the Raglan Ramblers are going rambling tomorrow because that's one of the outdoor things. So less of a risk outdoors with the current epidemic going on. So starting at 9 o'clock from James Street, as usual, near the Catholic Church, and going off to Winery Reserve and walking around there on the beach and through the pine forest and such like. Though there is an alternative option if you want to walk rather further. I think they're not walking all that far on the Winery Reserve, so you might want to, and an extra 5 kilometres each way onto it, which is the distance down the beach, and start an hour earlier at 8 o'clock, still meeting same place, same. But an hour earlier, so 8 o'clock at James Street near the Catholic Church, if you fancy a walk of more like 15 kilometres than 5 kilometres. So that's happening tomorrow morning, happening tomorrow afternoon. This one's on Zoom. Details are on the Raglan Community Radio Facebook page and also on the Raglan Community Board Facebook page and a few other places as well. They've done quite a good job of spreading the details around this time in contrast to last time. So I think lessons learnt from last time. Hopefully that means there'll be more people at the public forum for the community board meeting. And so the public forum starts at 1:30. It's as I say, going to be on Zoom. So the Zoom details are, as I say, in those various places, and should be an interesting meeting. I'll tell you a bit more about it in a minute or two. So that's happening tomorrow afternoon. One of the things that I'm not sure is happening is the global climate strike. As far as I can make out, that's supposed to be on Friday, and it's only happening in Wellington. But I haven't heard whether anyone local's organising anything or not. This is there were major protests a couple of years ago, and they seem to have gradually fizzled out. Still got at least as much of a problem, if not more. But the protest about it seems to have largely been forgotten. But so if you hear anything about global climate strikes, you might like to tell us at Raglan Community Radio, or if you're organising something. So anyway, that's supposed to be on Friday, but unless you're going down to Wellington, it's maybe not happening. One of the things I think is happening on Friday is backgammon is back. I've noticed that there have been quite a few posts on Facebook about it, so very likely happening 6:15 at the old school on Stewart Street on Friday evening for backgammon. Saturday, I think there's this is one's also outdoors, so I think that one's happening. We're near a street garden for a time bank event, looking at raised garden beds, doing a workshop on it, starting 10 o'clock. So have a look at the Find Our Environment Centre or the Time Bank page and register for that one. And Monday, Friends of Wainui have got another work morning on Monday, 9 o'clock, 3.5 kilometres out of town on the right-hand side. And in the evening, there's a Raglan Naturally special general meeting. That one's also getting a fair bit of publicity, but probably more so after the community board's over. So there's a Zoom link for that one. It's happening at 4:30 on Monday afternoon. So being on Zoom, and I think that's happening. It's not a full annual general meeting or anything. It's just a meeting to appoint an auditor. So maybe not as exciting as regular naturally meetings have been in the past. hopefully there's more to come. So that's the week as I've spotted it. I was talking about the Raglan Community Board agenda, so let's get back to that. That's happening, as I say, tomorrow afternoon, 1:30 onwards on Zoom. I was interested in the things that have been taken off the agenda as much as those which are on the agenda. I didn't actually pick it up from looking at the video of the meeting last month, but apparently they've decided to take off things like the Camera Licensing Trust, which was looking at where video cameras might be sited around town. They've also decided to take off the Manu Bay planting from their agenda. And they've also decided to take Sandsplash off. And it just seems to me that all of those are something that hopefully there's going to be ongoing developments, and it would be good for the community board and therefore the rest of us to be kept up to date with what's happening with them. And taking off the agenda seems to me to be moving in the wrong direction. They'll tend to get forgotten like the other things that the council does and doesn't get round to telling the community board, oh, by the way, we're doing this, that and the other. I'll come on to that in a bit. Maybe the most important thing that's been taken off the agenda and the one that surprises me most is the Raglan Aerodrome. It probably is going to go back onto the agenda because somebody did ask about it, and we've now got a statement from the chair of the community board, Gabrielle, that she is going to mention it during her report on what she's been doing as chair of the community board. So it's probably going to get mentioned then, if no other time. I'll talk a bit more about the. Oh, I might as well talk about it now, I suppose. One of the things that surprised me about taking it off was that the community board in December were promised that they were going to get the breakdown of the fencing costs. They didn't get that in February, and with it being off the agenda, it's not on this month's community board report either. It's maybe an ongoing thing because they. Despite the security camera that's supposedly there, the fence keeps getting cut. So either the security camera is no good, it's a fake, or somebody's found a way of avoiding being caught on the security camera. Not sure which it is. The fencing costs are presumably gradually rising. As far as I could make out, they'd already spent about 150,000 or so on the airfield. With all the things that have been happening since November, and presumably cutting the fence is going to add an extra 10,000 or so each time it happens. The costs are steadily rising. But one of the mysteries that I've asked if the community board can get an answer to is whether the council can in fact afford the cost of the airfield, and if so, why it can't also afford the cost of the food waste, which they're asking us to pay an extra $72 odd a year to have a targeted rate, so-called targeted rate, to keep the food waste collection going. Going to play one of the recordings that Aaron did about that, talking to Extreme Waste. And so listen to that a bit later. But it does seem to me a mystery that we're being asked to pay for one thing, but the council can find apparently a bottomless pit of money to pay for the airfield, which seems to me to be the wrong way around. It seems to me that climate change is more important than burning aircraft fuel to get to Raglan and then buying a few coffees and going home again, which, as far as I can make out, is the main activity of people flying into Raglan. There was also an article, what was it, about 6 days ago in the Waikato Times. So at least talks are starting, which is good news. The Waikato Times article said a long-standing protest at Raglan Airfield, which has at times disrupted flight operations, came to an end on Wednesday morning after mediation by police. A core group of about half a dozen had occupied the airfield since January to protest about the fence, and organiser Ra Puri said that following the end of the protest, he was looking forward to Kanoi Ki Ta Konoi, or otherwise translated something like face-to-face discussions with the council, and the first 2 weeks starting on Friday over coffee. However, the mayor wasn't so conciliatory. He welcomed the end of the protest. But is adamant that the fence has to stay. In a statement on the end of the protest, the Waikato West Area Commander Inspector Will Loughran said there was no requirement for any trespass orders to be given and no arrests were made. Police had been in regular communication in the last few weeks and working towards a peaceful solution. And we are pleased the occupation could be resolved without any significant issues. Ra Puri said that the police had been exceptional and created a bridge for better communications. He also gave the council credit for being more flexible over starting meaningful discussions. However, he said that the group remained concerned when not ending the protest, so to speak. The next step will be to establish ground rules for negotiation and look at how to separate the emotional stuff out so that the process is efficient and time well spent. He said that the recent data he's received affirms his concern that the fence down the middle of the airfield is a pseudo safety barrier, as it forces people to walk where they could still be prone to being hit. So, presumably, some of those discussions took place last Friday, and hopefully, there'll be more of them coming up in future Fridays, and we might move to a situation where the odd 10,000 isn't being thrown away on refencing for as long as the council remembers to do it. I do remember that they kept on replacing the signs on the footbridge that said you shouldn't jump off it, but now those signs seem to have disappeared for good, and people are still jumping off the footbridge. So my guess is that once this preoccupation with the airfield has gone from the council agenda, it will get forgotten in the same way as the footbridge jumping signs, and we'll end up in much the same situation. But it could be that it's returned to its original owners before that, because those negotiations are also going on. So who knows what's going to come first? Looking at some of the other thing that, so that's what in theory was removed from the community board agenda, though, as I say. The chair is going to discuss it, also to discuss the issue of Manu Bay and trying to provide more accurate information about the history of Manu Bay or Waikerri, and maybe even return to that historic name rather than the more modern Manu Bay, which, as with all name changes, it's going to take some getting used to, but no doubt people will manage. It's a rather simpler name, Waikerri, than Manu Bay. That might also be coming up tomorrow afternoon. This is all a community board meeting, as I say, starting at 1:30. Public forum's 1:30. Main meeting usually starts about half an hour later, but it can be flexible. One of the other issues coming up is the Well, there's a whole load of walkways, cycleways, footpaths, and I must say it's still a mystery to me which is which. So we have a report saying that they bit of whatever it is between Rocket and Pohjahkona, between the cafe out toward beyond the marae and the marae, is going to start the middle of next month and be completed by June. And they're calling that the Wainui Shared Cycleway. But there are also people cycling along the footbridge and the jetty in that place, and that one's called Wainera Walkway, which, as far as I can make out, extends from the jetty at the bottom of Bow Street, round by the footbridge, and round to the helipad over next to the fire station. And they say that they're looking to develop design options with Tonkin Taylor on that one. So look out for something happening there. You might remember they did have a report saying it wasn't likely to last much more than 5 years. Because if you've ever looked over the side there, then you'll be sort of a bit nervous that the whole thing's going to give way underneath you. It does look pretty dodgy, even without having an engineer look at it. And the engineers confirm that maybe 5 years is about as much as it's going to last. So hopefully this one's sorted out within 5 years. Another one that's called a walkway is the Papahua Walkway. I thought that was going to be a shared walkway cycleway, but they're calling it walkway. That one was finished on the 7th of March, so hopefully we won't hear any more about that. Be interesting to see how many people use it, either walking or cycling, and it does sort of go around the back of the toilets and not particularly attractive route, and certainly not a direct route. So maybe some people will use it as a change or to look at a new walkway. Greenslade Road, they're not calling it either a walkway or a cycleway, they're calling it a footpath. And they say vehicle barriers are still to be fabricated and a community planting day to be arranged for June. So I thought one of the objectives of it was to provide a cycle route from Greenslade Road to Lorenzen Bay, but they say they're calling it a footpath. So who knows what's intended or why they're using different names. Maybe that's something that will come out at the community board meeting tomorrow afternoon. One of the other mysteries, as far as I'm concerned, is what the point is of changing the speed on State Highway 23 to 60 kilometres an hour, but only as far as 200 metres west of Greenslade Road. So that's the Raglan side of Greenslade Road. I thought the whole point of having a 60 kilometre an hour speed limit along there was for the bend and the junction at Greenslade Road, where there have been a whole series of crashes over the years. Well, 9 crashes in the last 20 years or so. They explain that the reason it's west of Greenslade Road rather than east of Greenslade Road is that the revocation point was determined to be the furthest easterly point as possible, constrained by a significant culvert fix. By significant, they mean it's going to cost more than $2 million. And they say that would otherwise be left to the council to sort out if the road was revoked as far as they originally intended. So quite how long it's going to take for Waka Kotahi to sort out the $2 million culvert, I don't know. I thought they'd done quite a lot of work on it a couple of years ago, but seeming there's another $2 million to be spent on it. So see what happens. And I suppose reducing more of a road to 60 is inevitably going to make it safer because a crash at 60 is not as dangerous as a crash at 100. Another mystery on the agenda is the Orca Crossing safety improvements. It's the first time I've seen it given that title, Orca Crossing safety improvements. So I'm assuming that this is next to the Orca Cafe. And it's the crossing of Cliff Street to the what they're calling the Wainera Walkway. And I would have thought it would be part of that, but they're suggesting that if the community board wants it, and I've not seen any previous discussion of it by the community board, or by anyone else, except that it was part of the original proposals for the town square in that area. If the community board wants it, then the council suggests that they put in a service request, which is something that any of us can do. We can go to the council website, up at the top of it. It's got things about say it and such like, and it's also got request it. So you can request that the council does all sorts of things. And in this case, hopefully, lots of people will be suggesting that the council sorts out the Orca Crossing safety improvements. You might also like to request some parking signs because council says that they haven't got any resources for them. But we don't actually know what parking signs these are for sure. My guess is that they're parking signs pointing to James Street, which about 5 years ago the council upgraded at a cost of about $250,000. And they put a whole load of car parks along there. And they've not been greatly used since then because most people aren't aware that they're there. I think knowledge is gradually picking up, so some more people are aware now than they were 5 years ago that it's quite a good place to park quite close to the centre. As I say, I'm not quite sure because it says list sent to the council's roading officer. This was back in 2020, a couple of years ago. And the explanation has come back from said roading officer saying, not completed, no resources at present due to COVID impacts. So maybe that will get debated as well. A similar response from the council on Rose Street parking. I think it must be best part of 2 years ago that the residents there said they wanted something done about all the parking close to the wharf on their narrow street. And again, the council says, have no resources to undertake this work at present, which makes it all the odder that they're spending 150,000 plus on the airfield when they don't have resources even to put up parking signs. Talking about Rose Street brings me on to talk about the wharf structural repairs, the pontoons and walkways. Apparently, the council is going to request tenders to be sent in on the 11th of March. It's a couple of weeks later than they were proposing last month, so it might still get later. But we still don't know what they're proposing to do with these tenders or what they're for. So at some stage, hopefully, we might find out before the work actually starts. Given the record of what they do put in and the lack of thought of design that goes into it, which is why I was mentioning the vehicle barriers on Greenslade Road footpath. If they designed the footpath to avoid that need in the first place, by not putting such a tight bend on it, then maybe they wouldn't need to be fabricating vehicle barriers. But yeah, there's all that sort of thing that it would be good to talk about before they actually go in. Moving on to the one of the things the community board's been going on about for a few months now, Government Bayview Road give way sign. If a parking sign is difficult, you'd think at least a give way sign was a bit easier, changing it to a stop sign. But apparently not. The council says that this has got to go through a bylaw review. And the community board, well, Chris Rayner on the community board said that he would find out from the fire brigade how many crashes there had been because the council claimed not to know of any, which seems strange on the part of both of them that you can look at the Waka Kotahi website and they've got a map up there and it shows the map of all the accidents throughout the country, including crashes at that give way sign in 2007, 2019, and 2021. So three crashes there in fairly recent years, and a couple of them in the last few years. And yet the council says they don't know, and the community board was going to the fire brigade to ask. I suppose they could give a bit more detail, but one of them, the last one, showed a moped was involved, and there is a fair amount of detail on the Waka Kotahi website. One of the other odd explanations that goes with that is that the community board said, well, if you can make Cliff Street one way, then why can't you equally quickly do a give way sign to a stop sign? And the council said, well, to make Cliff Street one way, we just made a simple schedule change. And apparently they're saying that making a simple schedule change is okay, but changing a give way sign to a stop sign isn't okay. So another little mystery which might get discussed tomorrow afternoon. I still suspect that if a case was taken to court for the many people who drive the wrong way, and indeed even more people who cycle the wrong way down Cliff Street, then I think council would find it difficult to enforce. But unfortunately, that case hasn't been taken yet, and I don't know whether it's ever going to be. Maybe the police need to go down Cliff Street rather more often and find who's going the wrong way and take them to court. Certainly, I'd be quite happy to be taken to court on that one. Maybe I ought to give the police a ring and tell them when I'm going to go the wrong way down Cliff Street. Maybe people at Manu Bay Breakwater will feel much the same, because they've been asking for a meeting for ages. And now the council's saying that they're going to do a Zoom forum workshop. They're still deciding whether it should be 28th or 30th of March, but at least it's coming up. Sewage. I've been talking about wastewater overflows and sewage overflows, but the council's now clarified that one and said, we don't actually mean that they're overflows, we just mean that they're blocked pipes. So the seven which were reported last month are apparently seven blocked pipes and not seven blocked pipes which overflowed, which is reassuring. So the sewage isn't going into the harbour anymore. One of the less reassuring things is that civil defence, well, I think it was something that Bob McLeod started years ago, trying to get a civil defence plan, and they're still talking about just a verbal update. So it seems no closer to getting a civil defence plan. So rather hope that we don't get a tsunami or an earthquake or major fire or anything in the near future. Well, even maybe the distant future, given the time it's taken so far to get a civil defence plan. Same goes for the local bus. I was talking about the parking signs, but one of the problems with parking is that we're gradually getting more and more people in Raglan, and therefore more and more cars. And when you add another 500 houses over on Rangitahi, all trying to come and have lunch on a Sunday or whatever, then finding an extra 500 parking spaces in the middle of Raglan is going to be difficult, which is where things like buses and walking and bikes come in. The alternative could be to just build a multi-storey car park, but I imagine there would be quite a big outcry if you decided to put a multi-storey car park in the middle of Raglan as well. I suppose the alternative is you can actually flatten the whole of the centre of Raglan and turn it into a car park, and maybe that would solve the parking problem because people wouldn't want to come anyway. It's a bit disturbing that, again, we've only got a verbal update on the local bus. Also to see that our councillor was involved in a public transport business review workshop. So it's great that she reported she'd done it, but again, no detail as to quite what that means and whether we are going to sort out our parking problems by getting people onto local buses. You might remember that the council did put aside $100,000 a year for that. Unfortunately, they didn't do the homework on it. So the Waka Kotahi said, you want matching funding from us, and you're not getting it because you haven't done your homework on it. So council's plans to put in $100,000 and get $100,000 from the government fell flat. And hopefully we'll hear a bit more detail tomorrow as to where council's going with that one. It could be that having saved $100,000 in the last year, they'll add that on to the $100,000 for next year and actually get something going, and in the meantime do their homework and get the Waka Kotahi funding that they were hoping for in the first place. Raglan Natural is another one where we're getting a verbal update, though we have also got a report that says that the community-led development team is going to work with Raglan Naturally and mentions the blueprint plan. You might remember for a couple of years ago, the blueprint plan was the council's way of talking to people and getting quite a lot of people involved in saying what they thought ought to be done for the priorities of things to be done in Raglan. And they're now saying that the community-led development team is going to work with Raglan Naturally on how to progress those priorities. So see how that one works. Could be promising. The food waste consultation is on the agenda. I don't know whether it's going to get any discussion or much discussion. Also, the eco village is on the agenda. Again, no detail. Don't know whether they're going to have that as a major discussion. And the COVID-19 mental health toolkit booklet's also on the agenda, with a note that the community board want to set up an Instagram thing of some sort, unspecified about it. And also, the community board still has over $11,000 in its discretionary fund, and there's rather fewer restrictions on how that can be used now because council's pretty much fully devolved the running of that $11,000 to the community board, so they can take in applications at all sorts of times and not have the strict rules that council applied to them. So if you've got a project that you think might be good for using some of that 11,000, you might like to again talk to the community board either tomorrow or at some other time. It always puzzles me that council has a whole load of other agendas, and some of them are relevant to Raglan. Most of them aren't, or not directly relevant to Raglan, but the ones which are relevant to Raglan, it seems to me it would be good to include at least extracts from them on the community board agenda, so the community board gets briefed on what's going on. But one of those is the opinion of staff on the government's new policy to build more houses. So they passed something called the Resource Management Enabling Housing Supply and Other Matters Amendment Act 2021, and that came into force at the end of last year. And there's now speculation from the council staff that that includes Raglan. At the time, we thought it didn't, because Raglan's population is too small to fit within the definition of that act. But what council staff is saying is that if you take into account all the growth that's planned in Raglan, then it takes over that number, and therefore that new rule might apply in Raglan. Still rather doubtful as to whether it does, but I think it would be useful to have that discussion going on, and quite how it fits in with the various conservation measures in the district plan as well. So, hopefully, that discussion might take place, but it doesn't help when the community board doesn't have it on their agenda. Similarly, for the Waters Governance Board, the Waters Governance Board meets at least as often as the community board. This is the interface between the council and Watercare being the Auckland sewage, water, stormwater organisation that the council there runs. And because the council here was having trouble with running its local water services, it passed it on to Watercare. So the Waters Governance Board is where the council talks to Watercare about these things. And there's a few interesting things on that one which aren't on the community board agenda. And indeed, there's also a meeting of the council, which I think I mentioned last week, had decided that something was happening about the Raglan wastewater treatment plant, the sewage plant. It was behind closed doors as a public excluded meeting, so we never found out. There's also mention of sediment and shellfish testing in the harbour. There's mention of getting data from the pumping station next to the backpackers down Wynyera Street. And all these things apparently are feeding into whether the sewage goes into the middle of a harbour channel or whether it gets disposed of or used on land, as in the golf course and Wynyera Reserve and some bits of farmland. So we don't yet know. But again, I think it would be relevant for the community board to have that in front of them and be able to discuss it and ask questions. It's actually outside their area, but there is talk of connecting up Tiako with the piped water from Raglan would be a very expensive scheme because they're talking about drilling a hole under the harbour and spending 3 to 6 million on it. I suspect it's only one of the many options, or one of, I think, four options that they're looking at. The cheapest one is to install rainwater tanks over. When I talk about Tiako, I don't mean the village about 12 kilometres north of here. I mean the opposite side of the harbour from Raglan, where there's gradually more and more subdivisions. And I think one of the conditions of a subdivision about 20 or 30 years ago was that it should include this water scheme. But apparently the pump has broken down and it's expensive to replace. So that's why they're looking at these other options. I see we've got way past the bottom of the hour, so maybe I have the bottom of the hour items and then I'll carry on telling you a bit more about these things.
Turn on and chill out for a couple of hours on Friday afternoons and enter the Friday Freak Zone with Paul. 2:30 to 4:30. Hear music from 60s psychedelia, 70s prog rock, blues and folk to 80s post-punk and recent releases, and all with an ear out for the quirky and unusual. The Friday Freak Zone.
Do you have a property you'd like to rent? Raglan Real Estate offer a complete property management service for you. Short or long-term rentals with quality tenant selection. They also provide maintenance and property checks. Now let the team work for you. Give them a bell on 825 8669 or call in at 21 Bow Street.
You're listening to Irirangi o Whangaro, official station of the Maui Dolphin.
Which is where you're listening to Raglan talking to Raglan. And what time is it? 13 minutes to 7. So we'll be able to press on. Well, let's have some music. We haven't had any music yet. So I have a quick burst of the Grimethorpe Colliery Band playing Nimrod. That was the Grindthorpe Colliery Band. It's now 10 to 7. You're listening to Raglan Talking Raglan on Nirangel Whangarā, Raglan Community Radio. And I was just looking at the COVID figures, which are they're making optimistic noises about the peak being reached in Auckland, but it's not too obvious that the peak has been reached elsewhere. So we've got the total number of cases going up quite a bit. That is variable. If you look back 3 days, the number was 18,500. It's now almost 21,000. And in between, it went down a bit to 12,000 and 14,000. But then it's back up again today. Another three deaths in Waikato. And not very good news on the rate of vaccination in Whangarā, Raglan. So Roger had a story which said that only 1% or 71 people have had a COVID booster vaccine in the last week. He called that progress being stalled. An increase in those eligible mean that there's even more eligible people now who haven't received it, eligible because they're getting older, because they're longer since they had their second vaccination. So we've only got 64% of people in Raglan who've had their full three doses. Around Raglan, as low as 61%. So it's rather higher over the other side where they've got those water problems. 67%. We've also got the 5 to 11s who are only at 36%. So just over a third of them vaccinated, which maybe explains why it's spreading around the school pretty quickly. And the number of people in hospital at the weekend was 58, and it's now 79. So that number's also rising quickly. And as I say, three people in Waikato died today as well. So not good news. still a good idea to get those extra vaccine doses if you can, and to keep away from people as much as possible, I suppose. That's why I'm doing this from home rather than doing it in the radio studio, which is why I've been having some technical problems. The news there is not great. People are being encouraged to come to Raglan, though, from all sorts of places. So Lonely Planet has just updated its 9 best day trips from Auckland, saying the West Coast surf combines with cafe culture and kayaking or paddleboarding on the sheltered waters of Whangarā Harbour. And a bohemian band of local artists includes the diverse crew at Jet Collective and Māori-influenced design from Simon T. Farrell at his Toi Ho'oru studio. And there's also something called World Atlas, which I hadn't come across before. They're trying to do a geography of the whole world, and they've just added the Raglan entry to it. I think I knew most of it, but one of the things I didn't know was that the average annual temperatures in Raglan are 24 degrees in February and 8 degrees in July, and that the average rainfall is just under 1.5 meters a year, and that the Raglan skies are clearest in March and wettest in July, and that we spend 8.6 months with cloud cover. So that's presumably on days like this when sometimes it's cloudy and sometimes it's not. You add all those up and you find that almost three quarters of a year we've got cloud. So interesting figure, I thought. Whole load of other figures in there as well if you want to search for the World Atlas and other things about the size of a harbour and all sorts of other things it mentions. we might also get more tourists coming of people reading the New Zealand Herald. This one's yet another person coming down from Auckland and writing about it in their newspaper, saying on the first day we hit State Highway 1, but instead of stopping in Hamilton, we veered west to the charming Raglan. Like so many other Aucklanders, we love this coastal town with its easy, breezy, surfy vibe, friendly locals, great food, and endless opportunities to potter and meander. We spent an easy 24 hours swimming and mooching around sourdough and pastries from Raglan artisan bread, coffee from Raglan roast, an excellent start to the day. And after some browsing round artsy stores and taking a dip to cool down, we enjoyed a great night at the ever-popular Yulo's, where on certain nights you can buy takeout, roll out your own picnic rug, and eat to the sounds of live music and vinyl selections. Bang Bang Salad, Yamitsuki chicken, grilled aburi scallops and pork ribs with some laid-back lounging sounds. Don't mind if we do. But up bright and early, we headed to Wairinga. The track to the falls is cleverly designed to ensure excellent waterfall viewing from above, midway and the bottom. There was some whinging at the number of stairs, and not just by the kids, but we all agreed it was worth it. Tana Te Whenua say that Wairinga is home to Patu Pai Hariri, the fairy guardians, and it certainly feels like there's magic filtering through these lush green surrounds, a particularly wonderful tonic for a hot day. And after the falls, it was down the road that looked like time had forgotten it to Kawhia for lunch and a swim. And then having been to Kawhia, they headed back to Hamilton to stay there and then back to Auckland as far as they can make out. So anyway, people doing quick round trips to Raglan and hopefully not bringing too much COVID with them. But if it's dying down in Auckland, maybe that's not so much of a problem. We've just got up to the top of the hour, so maybe we can have 3 minutes to the top of the hour. So maybe we can have the top of the hour items, and then we'll listen to Rick telling us about the way in which the government's looking at food waste and generally looking at increasing recycling or reuse and minimising waste and the climate change reasons for doing that. But let's have the top of the hour items and then we'll get on to that one.
Looking for a reliable sparky in Raglan? Then call Stendi Electrical. Stendi Electrical are specialists in residential and commercial electrical work. But that's not all. They do rural and commercial alarms and security cameras, and they do solar power as well. Stendi does home ventilation, heat pumps and air conditioning, as well as audio-visual work, free view and satellite installation, and appliance repairs. Stendi Electrical is proud to be Raglan owned and operated, so give their friendly staff a call on 825 0214 or visit stendielectrical.co.nz.
Raglan Fuko exists thanks to the supportive community around us. Locals were our first customers.
To say thank you, we've created a $5,000 community fund for Whangaroa-based projects.
Maybe you need help kickstarting a community project.
Or extra funding to further the awesome mahi you're already doing.
Maybe you need money for trees.
Or hives for bees. Whatever it may be, we want to hear from you.
Head to raglanfuko.com and complete the online application form under our Good Project section.
Thanks for your support, Whangaroa.
On the air, on the web, 24/7, raglanradio.com.
Which is where you're listening to Raglan talking to Raglan on Irirangio Whangaroa. It's not quite the top of the hour yet, but pretty near. Another 20 seconds to go. So let's listen to what Rick had to say. I think I might actually finish Raglan talking to Raglan almost 5 minutes early today. So you never know, things vary. I don't think it's going to be worth doing anything after Rick's finished talking for 25 minutes or so, but Rick had some interesting things to say about extreme waste and about the government's plans on recycling and about the consultation we're being asked to fill in, which, as I say, my view is rather cynical that the council can afford to pay for an airfield, it can afford to pay for waste recycling. And indeed, it has left its options open, so it's not said it's definitely going to be tied by the consultation. It's said it's going to take it into account, which is a bit different. But anyway, here's what Rick had to say about all these things.
Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron, and on the line from Extreme, I've got Rick Thorpe. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Aaron. Atamari Whangaroa.
You enjoying the rain, Rick? I know you've got a garden going out there at your place.
Yeah, totally. Yep, this is the first real rain that we've had I mean, since that storm came through, but that was pretty much all wind and no or very little rain, especially for us. So yeah, we're celebrating. It's great.
Yeah, it's pretty salty wind as well.
Yeah, it was amazing. Mm. Yep, just we're about 5 k's kind of, you know, from Raglan Township, but we had salt spray on our windows.
And that's inland, right? Not 5 k's up the coast. It's 5 k's inland.
Yeah, 5 k's inland. And when I swept off the roofs ready to receive water for our tanks, I collected up a couple of cups of black sand. So yeah,
that's amazing.
Never seen that in 30 years.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, so we're here to talk about government plans. They're calling it government plans to transform recycling, including improved curbside recycling, a scheme to incentivize people to return their drink containers, and separation of businesses' food scraps from general waste. Rick, how is this as significant? Well, probably never as significant as the government would say, but is this significant?
It definitely is. Yep, it's showing real leadership from central government, and that's really what we've been missing is you know, someone holding a vision for the future. Being able to say to all of the councils around the country, this is what we need to hit as a nation in terms of waste minimisation and the negative impacts of waste, especially around climate change.
So the improved curbside recycling can recycle the same materials all around the country, food scraps. That's basically what we've had here for a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, and maybe about 18 months ago, I was involved in a working group and we were looking at standardisation of curbside recycling, and everyone was involved kind of in the waste sector, and we were deciding about what sort of suite of services that you could have in anyone's council to provide, you know, the impacts that we want, the waste diversion and particularly around climate change and around carbon emissions. And it was really difficult. I mean, for up in Auckland, you know, they're still receiving sort of 1 to 7 plastics, but for places that are far away from markets, it's really difficult for them to create volume and be able to transport up to these markets and participate. As well as the recycling's kind of right down the bottom of that waste hierarchy. Really where we need to be is around reuse, and so that's sort of bottle washing plants and refilling stations. And there was a real proliferation of different types of plastics that are also available, and we really don't need all of those different types of plastics. We only really need 2 or 3 categories of plastics, 1s, 2s, and 5s.
And those are the ones that are easiest to recycle?
Yeah, especially in terms of volume. You know, we're a small country, and if we're going to set up circular economy and have these plastics go round and round multiple times, be reused within a circular system onshore here in New Zealand, we really need to focus on what are those plastics and delete the other ones. And I guess the standardisation of curbside is one way of doing that. It's saying to industry, we're going to phase these plastics out, and you've got to change your products packaging to these types of plastics. So anywhere within Aotearoa, you'll be able to actually put 1s, 2s, and 5s out at the curbside and have it go into a circular system.
How much of the plastic waste that's going into the whole system is those plastics that can't be recycled easily?
Yeah, I can't tell you offhand. I mean, we've got, you know, sort of 22 years of stats here in Raglan, so I'd be able to provide that for you. But, you know, I would say that it's somewhere around sort of 20 to 30% of the plastics.
Yeah.
And it is changing. You know, we are seeing a greater variety in number ones and number two plastics. So that's good news. But anyway, for the standardisation of the systems that they're hoping to bring in, it's about crates, not wheelie bins. It's about having those 1, 2, and 5 plastics. It's having glass separated out, paper and cardboard, tin and alley cans. and food waste. So the government wants all councils within New Zealand to have a curbside collection of food waste, and this will be part of the standardisation that they hope will be in place for all councils to hit the that and by 2025. Yeah, 2025. Sure.
Okay.
What year it is?
Come on, Rick. You know what year it is, yeah, folks. Rick had a very significant birthday last week. He knows what year it is.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, we won't name the number. Just say it's very significant.
I've got a little. Don't tell people I'm 16.
Oh yeah, no, we won't do that. Not on the radio. You mentioned crates instead of wheelie bins. That's actually really significant. I know with Extreme having crates pick up instead of wheelie bins, and all the machinery that's required after you have a wheelie bin is significant in terms of the employment offered locally, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yep, it's more of a manual system, but it's directed at being able to offer back to the individual household, you're doing a really amazing job, well done, thank you for your contribution, or you can just change it around a little bit, separate out your glass or plastics. And that step is missed when you have a wheelie bin system and it's just tipped straight into the volume and becomes part of the mass. So, you know, when it hits the sorting and conveyor belt back at the MRF, you know, it might be sort of 10 or 30% residual waste, but they've really got no idea of where it's coming from.
So
then
MRF,
they just fire out generic, you know, education.
The MRF?
A MRF is a materials recycling plant, so it's kind of the mechanical way for the larger cities to be able to do the separation, whereas the amazing job that's done by the householder in Raglan, the separation is done at that household level, and that's the way that it's displayed at the curb. And so it becomes very easy for us to keep that separation, and therefore our product is really high value. It gets a higher premium at market because we're less than 1% residual waste.
So all the recyclables don't just get jumbled together and crushed together. Particularly the glass gets through everything when it gets crushed.
Yeah, absolutely. So the standardisation is pretty exciting, and it's amazing that Raglan has pretty much the standard service. You know, it's has all of those components with the crates, with the 1, 2, and 5 plastics, and the food waste collection. Really important. So we're doing really well, and the system we're using here might become the standard approach for the entire country by 2025. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that is. You wouldn't expect that 20 years ago, would you? Or maybe you're hoping for it.
Yeah, that's right. And certainly the tools have been available in the Waste Minimisation Act, which was set up in 2008. And we've really been lobbying since 2008 for the minister to be able to use these tools. So one is about the design of these systems. And another one is about CDS, or container deposit systems. Mm. So for people as old as me, at 60 years old plus, we will remember the days when, you know, there was a 2 or 5 or 10 cents deposit back on the Coke bottle or the beverage bottles.
I remember those days, Rick, and I'm much younger than you.
Much younger, yes. Well, so that system's going to come back. You know, we're going to have CDS again.
So this is significant because we've talked about how, like the beer bottles, the glass walls are really thin because they just get crushed instead of being reused. So is that going to have to change? And are we going to have a plastics going to have a fee or a price on them now?
That's correct. It'll be plastics. They're focusing on beverage bottles at the moment. They're excluding milk bottles at the moment, but all of this is open for submissions. So we encourage Raglan community, you know, use your experience. You're way beyond where most other people are around the country. So your experience is really powerful. But submit between now and I think the 8th of May is the last date for submissions, where the government want to have this feedback. And we will certainly be saying at Extreme Zero Waste and within the Zero Waste Network that we want it expanded to include milk bottles. It does include glass bottles, which is great. And what we will probably see in the future is that there will be the city bottle washing plants re-established, which is also part of the system that you and I would have remembered, you know, where those bottles would have come in, you would have kept them in good condition, presented them, collected your deposit, and then those bottles are well washed, sorted, and can easily go to regional or district bottle washing plants for reuse and refilling. So they don't need to be broken down, you know, and remelted and turned back into bottles again.
Yeah, it's a much...
There will be a transition.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very energy-intensive way of doing it, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So this is all kind of part of product stewardship. The CDS system, or the container deposit system, is part of product stewardship. It's saying that if you produce a product, you've got to be responsible for the packaging and for the product at the end of its life. So we're going to see a lot more of this. The next ones up will be tyres and electronic waste.
Yep.
But yeah, we hope, and this is the toolkit which the minister has, and we're really thankful that this toolkit has been being used now.
So are they working on that now, tyres and electronics?
Yep, they are. Yep. Okay. And yep, I would imagine that they'll be announced, a product stewardship system will be announced. We've had voluntary ones, but these ones will be mandatory. So this product stewardship system around containers, glass and plastic containers, will be a mandatory system.
So this is we're talking about the electronics. Like, this is quite common overseas, isn't it?
Yeah, very common.
Yeah,
very common. And that then will have greater employment. You know, there'll be disassembly plants. There'll be spare parts available. People will start making electronics once again, so that they can actually be repaired rather than replaced.
Have you guys been aware of the right to repair fight that's been going on in the US, North America?
Yeah, sure.
Because people, especially like Apple products, you literally couldn't do anything to fix them yourself.
Yeah.
And if you paid Apple to do it, it would just end up being cheaper to buy a new one. I'm picking on Apple, but it's a problem throughout the whole industry. And it's actually like a people's movement that's actually brought that one about, with a few of the well-known YouTube tech people leading the way.
Yep. Yeah, very much so. And same discussion in Europe as well. So legislation being formed. Yeah, the right to repair. Bizarre, eh?
It's ridiculous that we should fight for the right to repair something we own, but there we are. Hey, so the third thing on the list that the government press release I'm looking at here is separation of businesses' food scraps from general waste. So have we been doing that here?
The businesses in Raglan are amazing, and so they minimise their food waste to begin with for most of the restaurants, and then they have usually friendly pig farmers within the community who pick up their scraps. So very little food waste is going to landfill, but some is, and there are sort of some problem food waste, particularly around meats and things which pig farmers can't accept.
Right.
So in that system, the government is saying that they want it mandatory for all businesses to be separating out their organic waste by 2025. So once again, this is about the Climate Change Commission and staying on track to try and minimise our negative impact.
Yep.
And so that this is an easy win to remove organics from landfills. And within the toolkit, the minister can actually say that there will be a ban on organics in landfills, and therefore, you know, recovery systems need to be put in place. But yeah, we're okay here in Raglan and Whangaroa. We're really having the HCU and the setup means that we can tack on more services and divert a greater range of organics. So
the HCU, the hot compost unit, has that got more capacity?
It's kind of pretty maxed out with the size and growth of Raglan, but there might be some other ways of utilising it to be able to accept a greater range or, you know, greater volume. Lizzie's kind of working on that at the moment, and producing a greater range of products as well that we can, so that we can do more food production here in Whangaroa. So, yeah, those are the three things that are down there for people to submit on. One is the standardisation of curbside collections, which includes a mandatory weekly food waste collection service. The second one is about, yeah, the food waste from the businesses and mandatory to do that separation. And then the third one is around the beverage containers, the container deposit systems. So if people are interested, we're going to have some more information and some model submissions available online, and our wonderful Sarah will produce those and encourage people to make submissions. But also, you know, think about it in relation to the submission process you're going through at the moment for food waste collections here in Raglan. You know, this is going to become standard and mandatory in 2025. So if people don't support it now, then we will have to do it in another 3 years' time.
Anyway.
And we will have to pay for the provision of bins, etc. So it's going to be a lot more expensive than it is at the moment, because we already have the infrastructure. But if we interrupt that, if we stop the service, if we don't support it through the submission process now, and have to reinstate it in 3 years' time, well, it'll cost you more.
Okay, why is that? Why is that, Rick? You have to rebuild things, or what's the?
Yeah, we'll have to repurchase the kitchen caddies and the curbside bins.
Oh yeah, okay.
We can't expect people just to have them kind of in the shelf in the garage
for 3 years.
For 3 years.
they'll get used for other things. They are useful.
They are. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's just a small price to pay for climate change. You know, I think, it's a concern for the next few generations. And we've had it pretty good through, certainly through my life, very few restrictions, but probably it come at a bit of a cost for future generations. So, yeah, a small contribution now will certainly help on a, national scale to be able to meet these targets.
It's intriguing. So you say a lot of through this conversation, you've been saying a lot of this legislation's been in place since 2008, but the government hasn't done anything about it. And we're talking about food waste in the landfill, which causes greenhouse gases and leachate, which is pretty gnarly stuff. So yep. Am I right in that that's capacity has been sitting there for a while, but we haven't used it?
Yeah, that's right. Yep. And as we sort of move our way through the rhythm of 3-year elections, you know, and having a different governments in place, you know, it's certainly been on the table, but no one has been, brave enough to actually bring it in.
Mm.
But I think because of the Climate Change Commission's work and the fact that we're really lagging in New Zealand in terms of proactive work to minimise the negative impacts of climate change, it'll need to be compulsory, and it'll need to happen really soon.
Okay, and but they are going through a consultation, which some might argue they don't need to do. What was the last thing? It was the plastic bags, the single-use plastic bags. Did they consult on that, or did they just put that one straight through?
They consulted on it. There was a submission process for that, but there was compelling evidence, that it was an issue.
Yeah.
And look, people said it would never happen, that we would get a ban on plastic bags, but there you go. Whangaroa led the way. You know, we were plastic bag free at the supermarkets with the amazing support that we got from Raglan businesses. We were single-use plastic bag free for 2 years before the national rollout.
Yeah. Now, I'm interested, there's one other thing I'm interested in too, that if they're banning basically banning organic material in the rubbish bags is basically what they're saying, I think. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but how does that get policed?
Yeah, well, exactly. So wheelie bin systems becomes very difficult, you know, because you're not interacting with the individual household, whereas the crate system, you know, is better in the food waste. If you're not putting out, you know, a food waste bin, but you're putting out two blue bags, it's obvious where your organics is.
Yeah.
But yeah, we actually have applied to central government for there's a carbon tax, which is about at the moment about $7 a ton, and in many other parts of the world it's like $150 a ton, and that's really where it needs to be, somewhere between $100 and $150 a ton to really change people's behaviour. And this is kind of commercial as well as domestic. But the carbon tax at the moment in Aotearoa is about $7 a ton. And we applied and said, look, we're separating out our wood, our green waste, our food waste, our paper, our cardboard. Can we actually be exempt from paying this tax? And they said, well, it's going to actually cost more to audit you than it will be, you know, for you to pay the tax. But the idea of the tax is about behaviour change. And so, you know, we will continue to ask that question. And as the tax goes up in the future, and it definitely will, it'll leap up. As the landfill tax is leaping up, it was $10 a tonne last year, $20 a tonne at the moment. It'll go to $40 a tonne by 2024. And once again, the real behaviour change, especially around organics, happens at about $100 a tonne. That's the kind of tax limit. So in the future, landfilling is going to be really expensive. Organics is going to have to be removed. So we're going to have those sorts of systems here and, you know, find it all.
I guess the flip side of policing something is to have an easy-to-use organic waste service, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, let's turn it into some positives. You know, let's make amazing compost so that we can grow more and more food and become more and more resilient in town. You know, we've seen it over this last couple of years with COVID. You know, the supermarkets just get emptied. And so, you know, is that the future that we want? Do we want to build some resilience and be growing a greater range of foods? Let's support the amazing market on Friday nights downtown with all of the locals growing seedlings and food. Let's eat with the seasons and have sun ripened.
Yeah, yeah. And Extreme does, I mean, part of the end product of the hot compost unit is compost, verifiable compost that will help the garden grow. And you've also got, I don't know the names of it, there's all sorts of things, aren't there, Rick?
Of compost and
yeah, products, yeah. And the worm wheeze and
yeah, absolutely, yep, soil conditioners,
yeah,
mulches, yeah. There's lots of different products for different purposes, and you know these are special soils. You know they were built by Kariwai and Orkety volcanics, and you know we've been mining the minerals and the soil structure for the last couple of hundred years, 150 years, so. Important that we build the soil structure and the organic matter back in there so that we can look after it and grow a greater range of food, greater volume of food for the future.
Yeah. All right, folks, we've been talking to Rick from Extreme, and so the government consultation ends in, was it May sometime?
Yep, correct.
And more current is the Raglan-specific food waste consultation, which is that the end of this month?
Yeah, it ends end of March, so okay. Only a couple more weeks or another week or so to go. Yeah, please get your submissions in. Please reflect on that this will become mandatory in the future, and so we need to be continuing to lead the charge on this.
Yeah, yeah, and people can do that at the council website. I know I've seen it there. Are there forms at council office? Do we know that?
I think so, yes. Council office and... maybe at the iHub, I'm not sure.
Okay, all right. They're around them. Ask around, you'll find them.
Yeah, and they're online as well.
Yeah, the council website.
Go to Waikato District Council. But give us a ring up at the Recycle Centre if you've got questions, if you want to talk about anything from today's radio interview, and more than happy to answer people's questions.
And Sarah's just texted me to say that it's linked on your Facebook page.
Oh, yeah, cool.
So there we go. Thank you, Sarah.
My Facebook page.
Well, it should be, Rick. It should be.
Aye.
Go and do it now, as soon as we get off the air.
Okay.
No, I mean the Extreme Facebook page.
Yeah.
All right, Rick. Thanks for your time this morning.
And that was Rick from Extreme talking to Aaron from The Morning Show. I think they were doing it on Friday, but that consultation's open until the 1st of April. You should have had a form in your letterbox, and as they were saying, it's online as well. It's a good idea to think about what you're going to put on that, and indeed whether you are going to put anything, and whether you want to wait and hear what the community board's going to say about it tomorrow, and about that issue that I was raising earlier about why council can afford to pay for an airfield but can't afford to pay for food waste recycling and reducing methane and global warming and such like. But So we've got to 27 minutes past seven, so maybe Raglan Talking to Raglan's finishing early this evening. So if you have been, thanks for listening. If you haven't, hope you might manage to join me next week, 6 till 7.30-ish, here on Raglan Community Radio, Irangil Whangarā. And if you haven't been looking out west whilst you've been listening, you might like to do it now, because it looks like we're going to have quite a good sunset this evening, just watching the sky gradually getting redder and redder, so the sun seems to be producing a fair amount of light from the horizon where it's just setting at the moment. So you might nice join me next week anyway, as I say, 6 till 7:30-ish.